Sergeant and Mrs. Smith, you're going to love this house.
Is that a tub in the kitchen?
There's no field manual for finding the right home. But when you do, USAA Homeowners Insurance can help protect it the right way. Restrictions apply.
CBS Wednesday.
We have so many cool, diverse people from different backgrounds, different beliefs, different upbringings, and it just keeps growing.
Citizen of the United States.
I'm a hustler.
I'm a big Taylor Swift fan.
I'm the queen of the tribe. I'm a
survivor. I am playing whatever role I gotta play.
I'm gonna play this game full speed.
I ain't going down like no punk.
A new Survivor, Wednesday on CBS and streaming on Paramount Plus.
Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
You're ready, Bob.
Well, all right.
Audiences are raving. Bob Marley is electrifying. It's the feel-good movie of the year.
You dig?
Bob Marley, One Love. Rated PG-13. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
And welcome in, everybody. Another edition here of the Auburn Undercover Podcast on the 24/7 Sports Network. My name is Nathan King, joined today here by our publisher, Ronnie Sanders, and a special guest makes his return appearance to the show, Houston Nutt, former Arkansas Ole Miss, Boise State, Murray State. It's been a long time as a college football head coach. And Houston, as you were telling us before we got rolling, just recently, I guess, are you planning to retire now? I know you stepped away from doing broadcast work for a long time.
Yeah, after 11 years, going to New York, leave Thursday, come back Sunday. I got two grandsons now. I see what all the fuss is about. I got a two-year-old and one-year-old. And so I spend a little time with them and still do a few radios here and there, but mostly just speak to teams, speak to football teams, and speak to groups. And so, but I am retired from CBS, but I sure appreciate what they did for me.
Well, we enjoyed watching you.
Well, I appreciate it.
Well, talk a little bit about, let's talk about realignment. What are your thoughts on the state of college football and the SEC and where things stand?
I tell you, Ronnie, I'm concerned a little bit with where we are in college football right now today. Sitting on the sideline and with my popcorn and Coca-Cola watching this thing, I've talked to a lot of coaches, and it's a difficult time. When you look at transfer portal, when you look at NIL, you look at what's going on, the sense of the loyalty and hang in there, the perseverance, all those lessons that you learn. And I've helped a lot of young men that transfer when things didn't work out. I understand that. But to me, this is a whole different world now, where coaches especially, it's 365 days a year where there's really no break for them, because at any time somebody can show up, hey, so-and-so's coming. I've even had coaches tell me, hey, they had to leave their vacation with their family to come back on campus because somebody was going to show up for a 24-hour period. And you're talking about just so much disruption, and there's just no time really for families, and it's a very hard time. Now the realignment, I've always been partial to the East and West and the SEC. I always loved the East and West, and especially, you know, if you won the West, it helped so much with recruiting, and you're going to Atlanta, and it was huge. But I understand, you know, Greg Sankey and does such a great job for the SEC, and feels like this is the way to go with, you know, you're adding teams. It seems like every year, you know, who's going to be recruited this year? Because I remember when Oklahoma, and I think, Ronnie, you and I talked about this, when Oklahoma and Texas first got in the SEC, I thought that was actually a joke, an April Fool's joke, because I didn't think that was – there's no way that – because Oklahoma had been in the Final Four. They've been in the college playoff series, and they got there from the Big 12. But, boy, you look up, and Oklahoma and Texas now are added to the SEC, and now with this realignment – man, now a lot of fans love it. They're loving this thing. We're gonna have the best teams, the best two teams or three teams are gonna be fighting for the championship. But always, you know, I just always love. I'm a traditional guy. I always love the East and West.
I'm the same way. I guess at least with realignment now, you'll at least be able to watch Texas and A&M, and some of those rivalries will come back.
That's right.
I'm not sure that. You know, I guess we'll see if we got a 9-game conference schedule, but I'm not sure losing Auburn, Georgia, and Alabama, Tennessee is ideal either.
Well, that's a good point. You know, you're talking about those traditional games, but I think you're right. I think it's just a matter of time before that 9th conference game is added. I think with now with a number of teams that you have and everybody, you know, you're trying your best to try to play everyone while you're there in a 4-year period. A young man would like to say, "Hey, I played all these great football teams," and I think that's where the ninth game. I think that's coming.
I agree with you.
When you look at, I mean, the Auburn starting up spring ball here, everyone's obviously gets excited because everybody's a great player in spring, and I mean, it's the time where you can be eternally optimistic about college football, but. What are some of the keys, I guess, to not when you're on a coaching staff and you're trying to get new players in the system in the spring? What are some of the keys to, I guess, not throwing too much at everybody, but at the same time, I mean, you only get X number of practices before the season even starts in the fall. I guess how do you balance that as a coach, especially a coach that's trying to make improvements in year two like Auburn is?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, spring. I always loved spring. You had an off season. You had a tough, good off season in January. Right after signing date, February. And then, now here we go, spring. And what you love so much about spring is you didn't have to worry about, okay, we're not game planning for a game this week. We got 15 practices, and our goal is to get better each and every day and find out the best 11 on each side. And that's where, you know, the guys like the redshirt freshman, redshirt sophomore that's been on that scout team, and, boy, they've had a good off season. And now you start to pick your players and pick your team. You see the chemistry. Now, one thing that's a little tough, Ronnie, and I know you know this, was now that when I go to speak to teams in August, they'll tell you, well, I got 21 new players. They hadn't gone through spring. Mm-hmm. And so spring ball now is almost, that's even another scenario where things are different in the world that we live in. And when I spoke to SMU a couple of years ago, Rhett Lashley told me, he said, hey, I got 27 transfers and 17 of them, first time I've seen them will be in August. And so it's that, those kind of things. But what you love about spring is, man, without the pressure of having a game plan, trying to get things going, you can now really zero in on trying to get fundamentals right. Let's pick our best players. Let's see what Johnny can do at safety. Oh, he's not a safety. Let's move him down to a linebacker. I mean, you can kind of make some decisions there and see how guys work, see how they come fundamentally, and then you try to get them better each and every day. And to me, you're building that team. And I always love spring football.
How do you, you know, with NIL, with transfer portal, all those things, talk about going through spring, how do you build continuity? Because you've got so many players in and out, how do you build team chemistry?
To me, that's the million-dollar question, is how in the world do you do that when you have so many different personalities that you don't know yet, and now you got to go build that and try to build that relationship in a very short time. But to me, Ronnie, I think it comes to this. You know, coaching is coaching, and even though the things are so crazy, you know, I think it comes back down to this. Hey, look, listen, when you have that team meeting, you know, they got to know that, look, I'm the head coach. This is your offensive coordinator. This is your defensive coordinator. This is your position coach. And we got one plan, and this is the blueprint. And, boy, you got to get in or get out very, very fast. And to me, it's about three questions. Hey, can I trust you? Are you totally committed, and do you care? And when you can answer yes to all those three questions, and those are questions to me that should be asked every day. Maybe you don't have to put them on the board, but every single day when you're in that staff meeting, the first thing is, hey, can we trust him on third and eight? Can we trust him to go to class? Can we trust him to be in the weight room when he's told to be in the weight room? Can we trust him to be in this gap when we need him in this gap? And you're starting to, you learn your players, you're learning, this is like a new family. And to me, it takes really strong discipline, and the head coach voice has to be very, very strong to let them know, look, I don't know you very well and you don't know me very well, but we're going to learn each other very fast, guys, right now. And every single day, boy, there's got to be a connection, and there's got to be some listening skills on the player side. And it goes back to that trust, commitment, and everybody trying to work together. And the world that we live in now is, there's a reason why they transferred And that transfer portal that you mentioned, Ronnie, hey, look, I'm coming over here because, you know, in his mind, he's thinking I can do something with my career. And, of course, money is involved. And so you got all these components, and it's a time where there's a reason why I transferred. I believe in you, Coach. And so you're trying to get this relationship going in a very – I mean, it's a microwave. It's quick, and it's fast, and it's not easy. And so to answer your question, to me, it's – you know, it may be one of these deals where after practice – hey, Johnny, come with me here. Let's go to Dairy Queen and let's talk about today a little bit. And a coach got on you a little bit today and you had an attitude. You had a little bit of a frown. And there's a reason why we're getting on you. And when you're in between these white lines, we're going to demand your best. You know, to me, it's that kind of relationship, a very open, transparent, and let them know very quickly, hey, for us to go and get to where we need to go, it's going to really take an unbelievable trust by both of us. And every single day, when your name comes in that staff room, immediately everybody has an opinion. Even in the short time that we've met you, we have an opinion about your last name when your name pops up. And so as a player, we ask them, hey, what do you want your staff, your coaches saying about you every time your name comes up? Is he the guy that we can count on? Is he the guy that hustles? Or he's the guy that's going to take a lazy step. So to me, it's all those things right there, Ronnie, that has to happen, and it has to happen fast.
Does it, to me, in the NIL era and transfer portal, it's really almost like building an NFL roster. Yeah. It's, you know, I know you've got some core guys that are there, and they're there to get an education. But a lot of these guys, it's just, to me, it's more like the NFL now than it was like, than it's like college 10 years ago. I mean,
it really is. You know, this is just such a different world. And I tell you what, you know, we've always, when we went down the SEC spring meetings, we voted for, we wanted players to have money. You know, that's where we thought cost of attendance was going to come into play, where that was a good amount of money. And a lot of the players were still getting Pell Grant. And then we had an SEC opportunity fund. If somebody needed to go to a funeral, or if somebody needed a winter coat or a – we had ways to be able to – because we wanted our guys to have money. But now the NIL, to me, you know, name, image, and likeness, how many players truly are getting paid by name, image, and likeness? You know, when you study this thing and look at it, you know, some of these players, you're getting the alumni, we need more money, we need more money, we need more money. And, okay, what are we buying here? And then the freshman, this hotshot freshman that comes in that you paid money to, well, he's second, third team. He's not panning out. And so now there's disgruntlement, you know, by not only the alums that paid money, and then now the players saying, hey, yelled at me a couple of times, I guess I better put my name in the transfer portal. So it's this ever-changing way, and it's so tough. But you're right. It's an NFL free agency roster, and that's the direction that we're going in college football.
Well, I've got a simple question for you. How do you fix it?
Well, I tell you, that this horse has left the barn, man. I don't know how you fix this right now. Now, there's been talk about going to congressmen and getting involved and with legislators and putting a ceiling on this thing. But I don't see how you can fix it right now. Every time you take something away, a young man, a student athlete's going to go to court. And these lawyers out there, lawyers like Tom Mars, I tell you, they find ways that's going to benefit, where these players are going to be able to, hey, you, it's their right to have this amount of money or that amount of money or this commercial or whatever it may be. I just don't know how you fix it right now. I think you can try to get some legislators, get these guys going and try to flat-footed. Even with all the change of a bill and this and that, I still think it'd be very, very hard to manage.
Well, I mean, getting Congress involved is probably a good idea. I mean, they can't. I mean, they can't even decide what day it is. So,
I'm with you. I know it. I know it. It's a different world.
It is.
I believe they've got some laws, or excuse me, some NCAA rules coming up where the helmet technology is going to be a lot more prevalent. Guys being able to have that clock like they do in the NFL. Is that something that you wish was implemented when you were coaching on the sidelines?
Absolutely. We've talked about that. There's two things I wish we'd always bring up. A couple of things. One, that there would be no red shirt, 5 years. You get 5 years. You know, usually you pay for, if a guy does right after the fourth year, you pay for the fifth year for him to finish to graduate if the guys didn't go pro. And so I thought that would have been a good rule. And then the other one is having the communication in the helmet of a quarterback. You know, you're talking about signs stealing and all these things that happen. You know, that could eliminate a lot of that. And I just think, you know, that's, the pros do it technology wise. I really think, you know, you could get that done.
Different world. I remember when we were in Florida, we had a guy, his job on the sideline was to steal signs.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
And we didn't actually go to games and scout. You know, it was, but I'll tell you what, it's a different world than it used to be.
Well, you know, when I worked for Jimmy Johnson, when I was a grad assistant, I would go out as Oklahoma State was playing, they'd send me out on the next opponent. And Coach Johnson would always say, hey, get the substitutions, get the numbers, go down and try to listen to their snap count. And then if you can get signals, you get signals. I mean, that was just part of it. But then I think they stopped that. I can't believe it. I think the year was either 84, 85, something like that. They stopped it where no more sending scouts out because you had to exchange a film. But the way of just trying to get every bit of information you can was just part of that, was part of it, you know? And so to me, that wasn't, if you're trying, you know, when you're looking, it's one thing to look, you're looking across the sideline and you're trying to pick up something. To me, that's just, hey, that's coaching. But now, when you truly break the rule, when there's a rule that says you can't send a guy out, and you send a guy out and you take a recorder, I mean, yeah, okay, you may be pushing it a little bit too much there.
I agree with you. Hey, how do you handle a lot of staff changes at Auburn this year from the first year? How do you, with all the player changes, and we talked about portal, NIL, how do you manage that many staff changes? And from year one to year two?
Yeah. You know what? That's well, Derek Nix is there now, right?
He is.
I tell you, that's a good start. I had the privilege to work with Derek Nix. And to me, you know, I love – people and coaches that love the game so much that you'd want that. That's who I'd want I want him coaching my son. And you know about a person's work ethic and an attitude, and there's no ego and agenda. The ones that are worried about titles and worried about, boy, how quick I can get to the top, I was always a little bit leery of those guys. But the guys that roll up their sleeves, pick up a Gatorade bottle when it's empty, walk into practice, or does the little things where players say, boy, that's that coach. So that's how he talks to his son. Oh, so that's how he picks up a Gatorade bottle when it's empty, and puts it in the trash. You know, they're always watching. You can't fool an 18, 19 year old. You just can't fool them. And so it's the real. And to answer your question, Ronnie, in today's world, you need this chemistry, and you need an attitude of a server. I always want a server. If it's below you to serve, it's going to be beyond you to lead. And I think that's the lesson. Hey, look, I want servers. I want guys to, hey, it's okay to maybe argue a little bit about an opinion. But remember, head coach has the final say. So once we agree, once we say this is it, everybody get on board now. Mm-hmm. Let's don't get in an office and get two or three in a room and say, well, why in the world are we doing that? If you got something to say, you say it out there with everybody. But again, once we agree. Once we say this is it, and the head coach says this is the way we're going, hey, it's full steam ahead. And that's where the head coach has to keep everybody in line. Hey, look, just remind them, hey, listen, I picked you. I could have picked anybody in the country, but I picked you. And so remember, you have suggestions. That's all you have. You got suggestions. You don't have the authority to make the final say, but you do have suggestions. And that's why I hired you. I want your suggestions, and I want you to be that coach that's going to make a difference in recruiting and teaching and coaching fundamentals, all those things, and be that team guy. And so keeping everybody in line is not easy, you know, from wives, everything. It's from top to bottom. It's a difficult job, but man, it's a beautiful thing, Ronnie, as you know, when everybody's together and everybody's got the oar going in the same direction and that celebrated locker room, hey, there ain't nothing like it.
That's right. Wise coach once told me, there's talking about wives, there's two kinds of coaches' wives, great ones and excellent ones.
Yes, that's real good.
Houston, you going back to Derek Nix, I mean, as I'm reading up here, I mean, your first staff, you bring him on there at Ole Miss, correct me if I'm wrong. I mean, he was just a young position coach there at Southern Miss. What did you see from him? You know, you're taking hold of this really big SEC job. What did you see from him, a young coach like that you wanted to bring him on your staff right away?
Well, I saw an unbelievable guy that wanted to learn. He was eager. He was a pleaser. I love coaches that want to please and want to do right. Everybody that I talked to, he was class in the living room, class with players. And he had this work ethic from daylight to exhaustion. And he would do whatever it took. And you just love to be around people, being around people in a room that has this team attitude about we. It's not about me. And boy, to me, that to me what's really stood out. And also, he had been in the NFL. He got in the NFL a little bit. And I think that was another thing that I wanted some of his ideas there. And you could tell that he was going to be very, very good and very conscientious. And he was just willing to serve and do whatever it took to be a great team player and a team coach.
Did it surprise you that he was, I mean, he stayed at Ole Miss for, I think, 16 years after you hired him.
Yes. We'd laugh about that. We'd talk every so often. I've never thought I'd bring you to Oxford and you're still there, man. I wish I could have been there that long. But I only last four, but they kept you. So I always tease him, you know, about that. But there's a reason why that he gets kept and he stayed that long. And it goes back to what the question you asked me, you know, why him? And it goes back, you know, to his character. It goes back to his attitude and his willingness to work and to be able to change with different ideas. From Lane Kiffin, you know, he'd been with Petrino, myself. I mean, he can adjust. And when you can adjust and teach, man, you got a good one.
I worked with Derek at Southern Miss for 4 years, and I always thought a lot of him. I think he's a good coach and a good person.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
You brought up Ole Miss, and I know we're kind of jumping around a little bit, but compare the Ole Miss job now to the Ole Miss job then. I know the AD's different, which – which I'm sure makes a big difference, but they've invested in facilities and Kiffin has gone over there and despite all of his past issues seems to have figured it out a little bit.
Well, it has, you know, Ole Miss is really, you know, it's a good place. It's very hard. It's a hard job, but the one thing that, you know, when Hugh Freeze followed me, the one thing that was really good and apparent was they were going to put shovels in the ground and get going. And that's the one thing I really thought we needed. Ed Orgeron left me two good classes. He left me very, very good. They had one, but he left me two athletic classes. But there's also on the back end two not so good classes with about 8-9 seniors. Those last two classes, that meant my freshman and sophomores had to play those last 2 years. And Hugh got the benefit of that because they got their nose bloodied. But boy, by the time they were juniors, redshirt juniors and seniors, man, they were winning and beat Alabama. But you look at the weight room, you look at the, And I think Ross Bjork deserves a lot of credit for this. Immediately, weight room, meeting room, team room, the cafeteria, everything was, boy, it was on go. And so when you fast forward to Lane right now, the one thing that he's done, he's learned some valuable lessons, you know, with Nick. But one thing he's done is he's gotten involved in this portal. I think he'll tell you, if we were eating a hamburger, and I know his father better than I know Lane, I think he would say, this is a tough, tough gig now, because the whole world has a tough gig because of the transfer portal. But the one thing that he's done, if you look at the portal, he's hit some good ones. Yes. And when you lose like a Judkins, when you lose a great one, and you got to be able to go get a good one or a great one. But he's been able to do that, and especially at the trigger point, the quarterback. When you look at the quarterbacks that he has last few years and the one that he has now, man, that gives you a chance. And so he's done a good job, you know, with the transfer portal and keeping that free agency, as you say, keeping that intact. That roster is so important. And he's done a good job with evaluating and making decisions.
Hello, everyone. It's Micah Richards here. You might have seen me on CBS working on their Champions League coverage over the last couple of years. I wanted to tell you about an exciting new podcast that I've been working on. It's called The Rest Is Football. It's me, alongside Gary Lineker and Alan Shearer, two absolute legends of the game. The show combines topical debate from the world of soccer along with outrageous tales from our careers. And I mean outrageous. Just search The Rest Is Football wherever you get your podcasts. All the best from Big Meats.
Baseball has begun, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today in 5, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Sample, every Monday through Saturday as we deliver all of your fantasy baseball needs in just 5 minutes. We'll break down the biggest performers, news, and prospects who could make an impact this season. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found.
When you have sports mixed with your pop culture, along with humor and celebrity interviews, your earbuds are enjoying the Rich Eisen Show.
Dan Orlovsky, are you still a Jaden Daniels is the best quarterback available in the draft guy?
I think the three things that make it stand out for me are, number one, I think his ball placement versus man coverage is the best in the draft. Every quarterback in the NFL is accurate. He's got the best on tape. Number two, most transferable stuff to the NFL. And then I think the third thing is pocket peace.
Search for the Rich Eisen Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.
I'd like to ask you about Alabama's hire, replacing Coach Saban. How does a guy, you know, and I've got my own opinions, and I've watched it having lived here and gone to school at Auburn, but how does that work, bringing in a guy from West Coast, different environment? How does that work at Alabama?
Well, the only way that works is Alabama now has a standard where it's way up here. And that means winning. And that, not just winning, but winning championships. Mm-hmm. And so how that works is you got to be fighting for a championship, and you got to win a championship. And, you know, looking from a, you know, I don't know a coach. I don't know him. I'm just from the outside, just sitting watching. You know, he's done a good job where he's been. But to me, the only way that works, and I think one of the things that he's done good is he's embraced Coach Saban. You know, a lot of times coaches don't embrace a guy like the GOAT, like Coach Saban. They kind of want to keep him away a little bit because they're intimidated. But he's done a good job of bringing him in, and you need to talk to him and listen to the things that he did there for a long time. That was so successful. So the way this thing works is you got to be not just good. You got to be great evaluators, great recruiters. Keep that tradition going. The one thing Alabama has is great tradition going all the way back to Coach Paul Bear Bryant. And usually this place is one. And especially since Coach Saban's been there, he's set that bar so high. He's set a standard that the fans and they're going to only want one thing, that national championship trophy. And so that's how that works. And it's again, it goes back to the lifeline is recruiting. And recruiting the right ones, starting in Alabama, has great players, and then you got a good rival right there at Auburn. And you know, they're always fighting for the same ones in the backyard. So you got to win those. And so to me, that all adds up to how does it work? How you spell fun? W-I-N.
That's right. Yeah. We followed Spurrier at Florida. Yes. And it is a really, really difficult thing because, you know, it didn't matter what we did. Right. It wasn't what Coach Spurrier did, you know, and I came in with, I was a student at Auburn when Terry Bowden was there and came on but you know, a little bit of the same situation. He embraced Coach Dye, but for all the good things Coach Dye did, Coach Dye wouldn't leave.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that was up to Terry. You know, and it's really it's a difficult thing. And it's kind of and you know Ron Zook. I mean, he's like, we're sitting around the table one day and he's like, you know, everybody says you don't want to be the guy after the guy. He's like, but the hell am I supposed to do? Turn it down? You know?
Right. Right. That's right. That's right. And you can't turn a job like that down, but you know what you're jumping into. And you're jumping into that deep end real quick, and you're in the best conference in America, and it's only going to get better and better now with Texas and Oklahoma in. And so, you know, like I used to tell the guys at Arkansas, hey, we can worry ourselves sick. You know, you look at the schedule, Alabama and Auburn and Georgia, LSU, Florida. But the bottom line is let's control what we can control. And right now we got to recruit the best we can recruit, get the best players, make the best decisions, put them in the right places, and let's see how hard we can play for 60 minutes.
Going back to your staff here, Houston, I guess I should have done my research a little better. I mean, Ken Austin now at Auburn. I guess you've probably got a little bit of deja vu looking at this Auburn staff. You know, Kent was there as your OC for a couple years. What does he do well in that role? And now at Auburn, he's focusing just specifically on quarterbacks with them.
Let me tell you, if you hadn't met Kent Austin, he's brilliant. He was a Rhodes Scholar. I think if you go back and look, I think he's a Rhodes Scholar. This guy is brilliant. Now, I'm telling you, we had so much fun working together. I met Kent Austin through David Lee. And Kent Austin, you talking about a guy that can break you down, dissect a defense. This guy is the guy. And, you know, he spent some time in Canada, too. And I went up there to visit him when he was in Canada, when he was the head coach there with Hamilton. And he is so good. And, of course, he played quarterback at Ole Miss. And so quarterback is natural to him. It's just a natural position for him. Very good teacher. But the thing you're going to love, boy, if they'll let him, if they'll listen to Kent Austin, Ken Austin will have tremendous ideas. And Derek will know this. Derek will know this because he worked with him too. Kent can break down. I don't care if you're a blitz happy team or if you're zone or two man, whatever it may be, he will have wrinkles for you that will, man, give you an edge. And so really, really impressed with Kent Austin. I love his demeanor and I love the ideas that he brings to a game plan is just exceptional.
Speaking on that passing game element of things for a little bit, what are some of the challenges that come with someone who's in a situation like Auburn, where you have an incumbent quarterback, you have basically the same room as you had last year. You get a good freshman in there, but there's so much pressure on this passing game to improve. Now they have better talent at wide receiver, but how do you look at they've got a sixth year guy now in Peyton Thorne. How do you look at a guy who's been playing college football for so long and say, we need you to take that next step in your last year as a college player? What are some of the things that coaches can do to help somebody in that situation? Because that is such a big thing for them. They've got to get better in the passing game.
You know, it is. It is. And that's the thing about this. This league's so good that they'll make you play left-handed. You know, if all you can do is run, you got a problem. If all you can do is pass, you got a problem, because they're going to make you play left-handed. And so what can you do? And like you said, you take that next step. Where I think, you know, where they'll be good, Kent Austin, where these guys will be good, they'll be really good for Peyton Thorne to be able to. This is the time you've got to take that next step. And here's the things that we're going to work on. Here's our weaknesses, and we're going to be very transparent about it. Hey, it's 3rd and 8, and it's 3rd and 7. We're going to have a bunch of these during spring. And we're going to see if you can put ice water in your veins and have that team look at you, and you have the eyes looking back at those guys, those 10 set of eyes saying, hey, follow me. And we're going to be accurate. We're going to know where the ball is going, and it's going to be A to B in a very quick manner, A to B. If nobody's there, we throw it to grandmother, but we're going to keep the ball, or we're going to run it. You know, we're going to go try to get the first down with our legs. But it's those kind of things that, to me, where spring ball is so important. And they got to know, look, you got pressure now. We got a guy coming that's very talented. He doesn't know what you know, Peyton, but he's talented. And there's a time where, you know, sometimes Lou Holtz was good at this. All of a sudden, you know, I was a backup quarterback for him, and he'd put me in with the first team on third date during team pass. Nut, you're in. I am. My eyes are big. This is the first thing. You know, and he puts you in that scenario, puts you in that situation of, hey, pressure's on now. And that pressure cooks a ham. But can you handle it? And then all of a sudden that freshman, you put him in there, and you see how he responds during that time of third and eight when the defense has their ears pinned back. And so you're trying to get your passing game going. To me, that's how you do it. Boy, it's very game-like. It is game-like. Defense, let's go. So you bring it and bring what you want. And, you know, there's some days where I look, first and 10, let's don't be some blitz happy right here. Let's see what happens on just us. Let's play a first and 10, second and 8. And so, to me, I like playing the game. You play the game the way it's going to – what's going to happen on Saturday and put them in different scenarios. And just like sometimes when the game of the practice is over, we got through running our last win sprint. Everybody thinks they're going to the cold tub. Up, guys, it's overtime. Put the ball on the 25. And who can respond, you know, because your mind says, hey, practice is over. I'm tired. Nope. Who's going to lead us? And to me, it comes down to this. Which quarterback is going to put that team in the end zone consistently? Who's going to take care of the most precious thing we have and know where to go with the ball, know who to give it to over and over and over? To me, that's the guy. So I look really hard in spring about what you're saying as far as Peyton taking that next step and with competition coming.
Sorry about that.
I thought I couldn't hear you there for a while.
I had to unmute myself. Play calling. So you've got a guy like Ken Austin. You've got a guy in Hugh Freeze who's called plays the vast majority of his time as a head coach. You got Derek who hasn't called plays. You got a 6-year senior quarterback. How does that work?
Well, you know, again, that staff meeting would be interesting on how all that plays out. I don't know what, you know, Hugh has told Derek Nix. I don't know what he's told Ken Austin. Now, I know Ken Austin's called plays. And I know Derek Nix has been in a lot of staff rooms, and I know he's learned and gotten better since the first day I hired him. I know that. Now, he hadn't called plays. But to me, Hugh Freeze has to make this decision. He loves to call plays. Are you still going to call plays? And to me, the worst thing you can do is, hey, y'all do it, y'all do it, y'all do it. Then on Saturday, hey, run this, run this, run that, run this. That, to me, is disruptive. And so, to me, if you're going to call plays, you get in there with them every morning, and you tell your secretary, hey, we're going to hold off the interviews, the radio segments and everything until at least noon because, hey, I'm calling the plays. So, I don't know who's calling the plays. I just know there really needs to be one voice right there. And then, again, it goes back to the suggestions. We're building this game plan. Yes, I want your suggestions. I want your ideas. And then the one that has that knack, there's the ones that have that knack of have that feel of when to call a draw, when to call a screen, when to take the home run shot. All those things to me is the guys that know that have a knack for it. And I know Kent does. Man, they're good. They're really good. And so, hey, if Hugh feels like this is the best thing I can do to help us win, do it. Go do it. But I do think you got to be involved with that staff and that game plan during the week and not just on Saturday.
I guess, what do you kind of make of the expansion in the playoff era right now? I mean, we won't even get into the 14-team thing. That's apparently on the table. But right. Just with a 12-team playoff, I mean, it seems like, you know, you mentioned how tough an SEC schedule is every year. It feels like if you go 9-3 in the league or on your in your schedule and you're an SEC team, you're actually going to have a pretty good shot of doing that. I guess, what do you make of that format that they've created? And I guess the more opportunities it's going to give the SEC. Yeah.
You know, I think when we first did this, I can't remember if it was Ronnie or somebody else there in Alabama that asked me about what would you do. And I always wanted five championship teams, five, and give me three at large. And so when you get 12, all the fans, everybody's going to be excited. But I think you're right. I think you hit on something. The one thing about 12, I do think it gives the SEC more chances to get in the game, to get in the tournament, because of what you're saying, because of the schedule, because of who they play. If you go 9-3, and man, the only team you got beat by was Alabama, Auburn, or Georgia, but you beat Florida, LSU on the road. I mean, you look at these scenarios, man, it's going to be hard not to make them as a lot of those SEC teams to give them a chance in the 12, the best 12 football teams in the country. Hey, you're going to have a shot now. You're going to have a chance. So that's going to be interesting to see how all that plays out. But I got my popcorn and Coke. I'm ready. I'm ready to watch. I'm ready to see how that goes. But it looks like it's the numbers going to keep going. But the 12-team right now, I'm kind of looking forward to it now. They got me convinced now. That's the way to go. And you got like Florida State, guys. You know, with Florida State, hey, we know they lost a lot of players, but my goodness, when you win everything on your schedule and you win a championship, you know, you deserve to be there. And the committee probably got it right, you know, when you really look at it. But, man, it's hard to say no to a team that has done everything they were told to do that was on that schedule, and they won every game. And that's why I'm excited about the 12.
We'll wrap up. I got a couple more questions, but 12-team playoff, does that help coaches? Because before, you know, you had to get to your championship game or you had to win a conference championship. Now you got 12 teams making the playoff. Might take some heat off some guys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, Ronnie, I think this. I think we're in such a world now that head coaches, when you say help coaches, the longevity – of a coach being there at a certain place a long time is very, very rare. The Nick Sabans are very, very rare. And really, it's about a three-year window, maybe. Sometimes two. But it really is about three, and that's about it. And used to, you could get five or six. That's where I have a lot of – I applaud a lot of these ADs that hang in with coaches because it's rare. It's rare in this world that we're in today. Everybody wants to win yesterday. And man, it's just not easy. It's so difficult. So there's pressure, you know, there's pressure every single day. And that's just the bottom line. It's going to be pressure. And everybody wants one thing, win.
I got one more for you and we'll wrap up. With the advent of the playoff and the way things are moving now, you look at a program like Auburn who has had a number of seasons where could have and maybe should have recognized championships. You know, 2004, you're undefeated. Oklahoma gets blown out by USC in a national championship game. USC's vacated. Auburn finishes number three, 83, kind of the same situation with Miami and Nebraska. Is this a time when programs like Auburn should go back and recognize those teams?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think, you know, winning, you know, it's so precious. They deserve that. And the investment and the sacrifice that young men and coaches have put in. And you know how hard it is. You know how hard it is to win. And especially those scenarios that you brought up. I mean, why not? Why would you not recognize, you know, teams like that have given everything they've had, and then you look at it because of certain scenarios, but you go back and look what they did game by game and everything they put in, absolutely recognize them.
Well, I think a lot of people say, you know, claim versus recognize. And I'd always said claim, but we had Randy Campbell on, you know, former Auburn quarterback, And we've got to be pretty good friends with him. And we were having lunch one day and he said, kind of makes me upset. He said, we won those things. He said, right. 83, he said, we, as far as we're concerned, we won the national championship. He said, all we want is the recognition of those championships. He said, in our minds, we want it.
That makes all the sense in the world, and you want your players to come back and feeling good about their school. And I think that's so important. You have those memories and you're not asking for much. Randy's right. He's not asking for much. It's what they accomplished.
That's right.
Well, I think you brought it up, Houston. The Florida State point is something I've kind of thought about when talking about claiming championships. And because I think a lot of people said it kind of jokingly, oh, they should just not play Georgia in the Orange Bowl and just hang a championship banner. Obviously, there's no merit to that. But,
right.
And it's not to say that championships are, arbitrary, but at the end of the day, they weren't allowed to compete for a championship just because of a decision some people made. It had nothing to do with what they accomplished on the field. Some people just said, no, you can't compete for this championship. And so, I kind of, a few years ago when UCF hung their championship banner, I kind of laughed at it at the time. But like, the longer this goes on, and especially with that Florida State example, that's just made me think of that, Ronnie. Like, what is so wrong with saying, no, we feel like we did the best we could and we feel like we accomplished this? Maybe not hanging a banner, but, celebrating those accomplishments. And that's what college football is all about, And like you said, when players come back, they'll see that banner. Could other schools laugh at it? Maybe. Sure. But if if it's what you feel like you accomplished, then, that's what college football is all about, I think.
And in 20 years, does it matter? I mean,
no, everyone will forget about it. Yep.
Right. Right. That's exactly right. And, you just have, just a short time as those 4 or 5 years that you go to school there, it's just a short time. And all of a sudden, it's gone and you look back and there's to me, it's such a great feeling when former players came back, when teams came back, and it shows there's a lot of players that don't want to come back. And it goes back to what you're saying. They don't want to come back because, hey, you don't even want to recognize me. And I put in a lot of hard sweat and tears for this school and program. And that's why I think it's important to recognize, teams like that.
Well, Coach, we appreciate you being with us.
Hey, appreciate y'all having me, guys.
Yeah, thank you so much, Houston. It was great.
Let's go!
It's the most all-star-studded challenge ever. And this time, it's every competitor for themselves.
Best challenge ever!
The Challenge All-Stars. New season now streaming on Paramount+. Go to ParamountPlus.com to try it free. Terms apply.